Hello, Rob. Welcome to the World Class Business Episode 1 pilot. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I'm very excited to be here.
But I'm glad that we're able to get started and to really delve into your practice, your passions, and what you've discovered in the last couple of years with regards to what it is that you do. And with that being said, how would you describe what your job is and what your newfound passion in life is?
Well, I currently, my job at the moment, as of the last 3 months, is I run a personal training company in which I am the sole personal trainer at the moment. So you could say I'm a personal trainer. And I do a little bit of IT consulting on the side. That was my previous life, if you will. The last 11 years were spent in the IT space and haven't quite let that go. But yeah, you could say the bulk of my time goes into training people and learning about training and wellness in general, and just trying to expand my business. I shouldn't say I'm trying to. I just have grand visions of that happening, and I'm just trying to ride the wave and paddle hard.
Well, I like the sport analogies. With that being said, you said grand vision. What would your grand vision for your business and your, it's fair to say it's a passion also?
Oh, yes. Yes.
What would your grand vision be? Where would you like to be? Where would you like to develop it to?
So I should really have a specific answer for you, because that all, you know, great business models seem to have a 5-10 year plan. I don't have necessarily a set restricted vision. It's more in terms of I'd like to train as many people locally as, and locally being here in southeastern Ohio. In other words, have, you know, actual physical interactions with people as opposed to the online training, which I'm, by the way, I'm not opposed to. I'll get to that in a moment. But right now, most of my cycles go into my local training. The sessions themselves take up time, and the planning, the programming, the research behind it, and just trying to kind of fine tune my business processes as well to, you know, eventually hopefully save efficiencies there, or build efficiencies rather. But so I'd like to offer training to anybody in the area who wants it. I'd like to bring on get several personal trainers eventually working for me on a contractor basis or employee basis, depending on where the company goes, and just try to offer quality, affordable personal training to anybody who's interested in the area. Now, while I'm doing that, I've always been interested in having a presence on the web, which is extremely general. But I've always just geeked out. And I remember the first time I found out that you could make money online by just having somebody read an article you wrote and click on it, it just blew my mind. And when I actually put that into, actually made that happen, I think I used AdSense 10 years ago for some just BS article I wrote on, I don't even know what, and somebody clicked on it and I got like 75 cents, and it was the coolest money I've ever made. It was the coolest income I've ever had. So I'd like to continue that trend. I love attention. I like videotape. I like recording myself. I'd like to have, I have several ideas in mind for online fitness content. And I just want to just continue putting out content and market that as well as I can. But of course, like I said, my local clients are my priority right now. But I'd like to grow that online content, maybe, you know, eventually release some an ebook or a membership site. And I have some ideas for that too. So that's, again, no real specifics there, but I'd just like to just continue throwing fuel on this fire and get better and better. I mean, every week I get better at what I'm doing, and I realize that the week before I didn't know what I was doing, which is both discouraging but also encouraging. So it's just a lot of fun. It's I don't have any regrets of making the jump yet. Family still eats. We are still protected from rainstorms, and it's all good, man.
I'm sure you're feeding your family a combination of high monounsaturated fats and protein base to follow with your credos, which we'll get into.
Is that good
stuff? Starting them off young.
Yeah, we do okay. We're not perfect, but the kids eat vegetables and they eat plenty of lean meats. And
you talk about your background in not only IT and your digital thumbprint that you want to lay, but also how you discovered that you could actually make money in an early age having a web presence. And it sounds like that's fair to say it's shaped you for who you are today and what your ongoing visions are for the business. Could you tell us a little bit more about, you know, some of your earlier experiences with social media, YouTube channels, making money online that has maybe shaped your business sense and maybe the direction you want to go with your personal training?
Sure. I'll do my best. So just to lay it out there, I wouldn't say that I've ever been very successful in terms of generating revenue via online ventures. However, I've tasted just enough success to know what's possible and to get excited about it. I have, you know, like I said, I first started out, I think my first deal was a Blogspot. Do you remember Blogspot? Or I think it used to be called Blogger. It was Google bought them out since. But anyways, it's a free, it's kind of like before WordPress really got big with their free online blog.
I'm a little late to the game. So WordPress was my first introduction.
Yeah, whatever. So let's just say it was a free blog platform. So I started this site, and I only did it for about a week. And it was actually a pretty great idea. Got it for the week that it was up, it got a bit of attention. It was called Wallet Banger. And I basically signed myself up. I got a P.O. box. And like I said, this was like not too long after Leslie and I got married. So this has been a while, about 12, 11 years ago. I signed myself up for like every online survey and, you know, win, you know, click here to win a TV and just everything I possibly could. And then I just went through the surveys and journaled my experiences with them. And it was, it was actually a lot of fun, but, I think I made probably $20 through AdSense, Google AdSense.
So you not only made money off of the surveys and that you filled out, but you also made
money
off of the blogging about it.
The surveys. I was promised money off the surveys. Some people still owe me some money. I'm going to break some knees, but I made money off of the ad revenue. Unfortunately, and like all these stories, I was not quite disciplined enough to keep it up. You know, it's just like somebody hitting the weight room. You see results. You could see results or at least feel them in the first week. As soon as that, and you know, they just, especially for a new lifter or someone new to exercise and eating properly, they see great results very quickly. And the same thing I think goes for business as well, but for whatever reason, you know, a distraction comes around and you drop it and you get lazy and new shiny interest comes, it introduces itself and you lose the whole thing. And I did that several times. I don't want to go into the details of all of them. One of the ones where I had the most success, where I actually put a lot of discipline into and hard work into, was a site called Gun Safe Haven. I basically just picked a niche and I was reviewing gun safes. And to be honest, I didn't know much about gun safes. I just liked guns. And I knew that there was, through some keyword research, I knew that there wasn't very much competition and that there was a lot of interest, just to put it simply, I was targeting Google search and basically people looking for gun safes to buy. And there wasn't, like I said, there wasn't much competition and there was a lot of opportunity. So I just started writing gun safe reviews. And I started, you know, I got to the point where first I was just kind of writing garbage, in my opinion now, garbage articles, basically just taking information on product features that I'd get from, you know, I might find on the manufacturer's website, and then just basically rehashing them into paragraphs and throwing ads on it. And that works okay, but I got really bored with it. So I felt kind of like I was just polluting the internet. So I actually started getting a hold of like CEOs of gun safe companies, or getting a hold of the marketing departments and having them send me safes to actually review, and kind of creating some more authentic. I did like an interview with a couple of safe CEOs, safe manufacturer CEOs, and creating some actual, you know, real authentic, unique content. And that was going really well. I was making, I know it's tacky to talk about how much you make, but you know, it's, I almost look at it as a game, at least in hindsight. I was making about $1,000 a month just off of just people clicking on ads. And then Google updated their algorithm. I think it was Panda. And the way that I had done, so like I said, I started off kind of doing some sketchy stuff. Nothing illegal, but things that were gray hat. I don't know if you're familiar with white hat, black hat, gray hat. Some legitimate marketing, some link farms and guest posting for, you know, just questionable sites and that sort of thing.
Does it involve also paying people overseas to
write articles
with keywords in them that really don't say a lot?
Yeah, I had a couple. I had a couple writers. I think I used Odesk. I had a couple of writers from the Philippines to basically just rewrite an article for me. So I'd say, rewrite this article 100 times, you know, and I'd pay them whatever the asking price. It wasn't much, but, and yeah, it just a lot. No, there's certainly a lot of good Filipino writers. Don't look too deeply into that, but I was paying them to write crappy articles. I mean, it was like, you know, don't worry about how it sounds. Let's just get them out there. And I was doing this early on. I had since stopped doing it. But it was kind of too late. The link profile was already out there. I didn't know enough about going back and disavowing all those old crap links or the damage that had already been done. Yeah. So Google basically de-indexed my site, which basically just means no one can use Google to find anything on my site anymore. And I was still getting traffic from Bing and Yahoo, but just like it does today, it doesn't mean much.
That must have been the early days when Bing was just coming up, because Bing's a major player now, aren't they?
It's more major, but Google's still king by far.
Google's the gold standard.
I mean, I was getting, to give you an idea, I was getting number one spots on the search engine page for really competitive keywords, like, you know, best gun safe or gun safe reviews from Yahoo. And then, whereas if I was on even like the second page for that in Google, I'd be getting like triple the traffic. So even though I was getting excellent reviews, even though Bing and Yahoo still loved me, it didn't really make any difference. I mean, a little bit. I think basically my traffic dropped from, you know, 350 unique visitors a day searching specifically for, you know, in the buying mood, you could say, searching specifically for something along the lines of best gun safe or gun safe review, indicating that, you know, they were looking to buy a gun safe, to, I think I was getting like 50 people just getting generic long tail keywords. And sorry if I'm getting too deep into that, but the gist was, it was a lesson learned. Number one, don't take shortcuts. They pay off temporarily. But I felt, like I said, I felt bad about it, and then I paid for it as well. So it was kind of a double whammy, and it took me a long time. I actually got the site back up, sort of got in Google's good graces again, but it took about 4 years. Things move slowly. They don't owe me anything. So, and the site's kind of slowly building back up, but I'm not really putting too much energy into that right now. But anyways, the short version of that is that I realized that you can make money, because for somebody starting off really in anything, but especially something as saturated as is making money online, or passive income, or making money in your sleep, or whatever kind of misnomer you want to put on it, because it's all hard work. Basically, people envision making 50 grand for writing a couple articles, and they might put their blood, sweat, and tears into like writing some ultimate guide for something, and then the field of dreams, the field of dreams, if you build it, they will come, does not exist. I mean, you have to work to get people to it. Doesn't matter how amazing your content is, if you don't have people coming to it, it's, you're the only one, you and your mom are the only one reading it. So I learned that, you know, I learned how to kind of drive traffic and learned what was possible, and learned that you stay to it long enough, because if my first month, I think I made like $2 off that site. Second month, it was like $13. Third month, it was I think like $40. And if you look at the hours I was putting into it, I was probably making like 50 cents an hour. But then all of a sudden it kind of exploded, and it was like $200 the next month, and then like 400. And then I never really quite broke through that, you know, multi-$1,000 mark, because I sort of fell off a little bit on my efforts. But the cool thing was, is all the work that I put in before was starting to move it. And so I know that once you break through that initial plateau of, you know, you get through all the other posers and everything, sort of get to that second tier where somebody, you know, so maybe somebody wrote 10 articles and said, nah, I'll never make any money, and they quit. You get past that and keep working at it, you get to that next level, and you start to see what's possible. So it was a valuable lesson, and I learned a lot from it. But that is a really long answer, man. You sure you're interviewing me?
Probably good lessons for personal training and also for running your own business, right?
Yes. So yeah, that's what we were talking about, right?
Probably help your helps with how you coach people, which we'll get to. Definitely. I want to circle back to that. But, you know, I think it is interesting that you were in this continuous trying to find money and working really hard to develop a digital footprint for yourself and going all kinds of different avenues, and also doing the IT. And like you said, you were losing focus with it, but so it really wasn't fulfilling that inner passion. And you discovered it with personal training and with helping others and also helping yourself, because I think you've seen quite a metamorphosis in your body and your physique and how you take care of yourself. So when did you know that personal training was for you? How did you discover it, that you wanted to make this transition? Was it something early on in life, or was it something more recent?
It was something definitely more recent. It was... You know, so the way I got into IT, which, like I said, I had an 11-year career, and I was in retail management before that, was I hated retail management, and I wanted to make websites to make money in my sleep. And so I went and took a class on how to make websites and found out that I kind of like IT, and I'm actually sort of good at it. So I eventually shifted and found myself in that position. Same sort of thing with personal training. I wanted to write articles on fitness, because I, like you said, I made some changes in myself, some significant changes, and was learning a lot about fitness as a result. And I thought, like most people, I thought I knew more than I did, and I thought that I could write some articles and put some good information out there, start a new website, but I knew enough to know that I needed at least some sort of credentials after my name, so maybe to help somebody listen to me, to get people to, you know, believe my information, which may or may not have been good anyway.
So this really started off as a continuation of your previous endeavors of wanting to blog and generate online income.
Yeah, I've just been obsessed, man. I'll get back to that in one second. I just been in. It's not so much making money; it's the way I make money. Like, money's important to me. I mean, I like things. I'm not terribly materially obsessed, but it's like I said before. When I got that first click on Google AdSense, it was like the sweetest income I've ever made, maybe since and maybe since. Like I've, it's almost like I'm probably exaggerating significantly here, but it's almost like every dollar that I make from my own, just kind of purely or organically from my own doing 100%, or at least as much as you can measure that, is worth $10 that I make working for some job that I only sort of care about. And so that's really, that's kind of where I was. And to have it come in passively, so to speak, again, that's sort of like a misnomer. Like it's nothing's that passive about it. The click is passive. You're not sitting there, you know, directly selling something, but everything else, there's huge hard work behind it. But anyways, yeah, that's exactly what happened. I just wanted to take a different approach to, you know, I wanted to write fitness articles, get some online content out there. And I decided I need to get a certification to make it look like I knew what I was talking about. So I looked at certification offerings and I found ACE. And ACE is one of the big players in personal trainer certifications. And I said, okay, I'm going to give myself a year to just study this material. It was 3 books. There's a lot of information. And I realized as soon as I got that book, man, like, so my whole lifting, my whole training experience up until that point had been just trying to get jacked, you know, I remember turning to that book and I said, okay, where's the information on the 4-day splits? You know, where's the bodybuilding? Where's the bodybuilding.com threads, you know, putting the textbooks that I'm looking for? And it was like, I remember seeing out of like 900 total pages of all the material, there was like a page and a half on bodybuilding style hypertrophy training. And I was like, oh my gosh, what? This is different. But you know, I said,
what was it?
What's that?
What types of materials was it?
Everything, man. You know, first of all, a lot of ACE, what they do, and right, I think rightfully so, is they kind of they harp a lot on protecting your client, and which is really should be your number one priority, or at least tied with a couple other things. But you know, so scope of practice, recognizing, you know, don't try to be a physical therapist and a doctor and a nutritionist, you know, be a personal trainer, and you can, you know, sort of help you to decide when you're overstepping your boundaries, and help you decide, you know, how to create a referral network and when to, you know, approach your folks in your matrix, your referral matrix, and keeping things legal and choosing, you know, just basically it all revolves around client safety. And there is definitely plenty of, you know, they have their IFT model, which is like a linear periodization model of how to train people, approaches to that, and you know, different exercises you can do. And then there's a whole book on just the innards of physiology and anatomy, and I was in over my head. But I decided I was going to do it. I'd already spent the $40 on used books on Amazon, so I basically just read like 10 or 20 pages a day and got through the material, made sure I really knew it. So, because I got through college cramming for tests. I'm not proud of this, but I skipped all my classes. I never really learned anything. I just got really good at taking tests. And it was terrible. It's a terrible way to do things. I'm kind of ashamed of it. But nevertheless, that's how up until this point I had learned. And I decided that this was going to be something I was actually going to really do my due diligence and actually try to learn the material. So in that process of trying to
get what was different about that material that made you want to dedicate yourself more?
Well, I enjoyed it, and I think because I already had several years of experience in fitness. And have you ever taken a course on something that maybe you want to get into, but you don't currently have any experience? Like for me, it'd be like a piece of software that my boss wanted me to learn, but I'd never actually spent any time with it.
I would say for me, that was my second year in college with imagery, hypnosis, and neurolinguistic programming. I was always fascinated by it, but really didn't know much about it. And the course exceeded all my expectations and made me just delve into it more than I ever thought I would, even though I was always interested in it.
Okay, so that's actually kind of a, you know, that's sort of a success story in terms of going in completely green to a course, not knowing anything about it, and developing an intense passion for it. My experience, however, with a lot of courses that I took, especially when not knowing anything about them, is that it's really tough to, you know, as good as an instructor might be and as good as the course material might be, if you don't have any experience with it, it's really tough to put yourself, at least for me, tough to put myself in the position where I can really view the application for it. I mean, I could see how to use the program, but if you don't have a context, it's tough to really embrace it. So I had a context going to fitness. Like I said, I thought I knew a bunch already. So while I was learning, seeing how much I didn't know, the difference between that and you learning some obscure business intelligence product that I really didn't care too much about was that in this case, I knew how much I didn't know and I wanted to learn it all. So I already had my brain, due to my fitness experience personally, was already primed for it. So in the midst of it, about let's just say a couple months into studying, I realized that, kind of like, again, where I decided to shift into IT in that story, I realized that I might actually want to be a personal trainer. Like, this looks kind of fun. So I decided that not only was I going to have some letters by my name for writing, but I would actually try to use the certification that I was getting. And you know, from that point, I started a little small training group once a week, and you know, expanded it, got a contract with a corporate contract for training some of their employees. The demand got higher. I got a little less passionate about my day job. Actually, I was never really that passionate about it. I just was pretty good at it, and it paid well. And I didn't absolutely hate it. So I let that string along probably for longer than I should have. But anyways, I finally got to a point where I had to make a decision. Leslie, my wife, kind of more or less forced me to make the decision. Am I going to continue expanding my part-time business and encroach on family time and leisure time even more, or am I going to just quit my day job and go for it? So that's what I eventually decided to do.
Do you think you would have made the leap without Leslie? Because I think sometimes it takes a smarter woman than us to see it in us and to give us the confidence. Do you think that was a big part of your metamorphosis? Not a physical metamorphosis, but a career metamorphosis, actually.
I really do. I could give you many, many
examples. What was it maybe that you didn't have at the time that she helped give you?
She's always been... I'm a dreamer. Like, I am stuck in my own head. I have no problem coming up with new ideas, and like, honestly, that I don't even have to come up. This makes it sound like I'm bragging, but I'll get to the point where it's sad. I don't have to think to come up with something. It just comes to me. It's like my brain's like a faucet of creativity. Some ideas much, much, much better than others. But the unfortunate thing is, it's really tough for me to focus. It's tough for me to be grounded. I've started, I don't know, man, dozens of projects over the years that I've started strong and just kind of flaked out because I got interested in something else. She's grounded me. I guess that's really the best way to put it. She's like an anchor in my reality, and she's never really given me... All her opinions are—they're in line with what I want. We're on the same page together. She just has kind of a more clear vision of what, you know, how life is. Where I'm kind of up in the clouds. So we make a pretty good team. But so essentially, what she did was gave me an ultimatum. It's basically like, no new clients, no new work unless you quit your job. We can handle it. You know, she said I have a solid part-time job. We've been saving for this. We've been talking about it for years. Let's just do it. And so.
How did that make you feel?
It's funny. Like, you know, everybody says, oh, how's Leslie? You know, when I quit, you know, definitely people thought I was a little nuts because I really did have a great job. And in a whole career built up, people thought I was a little nuts, and they'd ask, you know, what, how's Leslie feel about it? And I'd be like, dude, she's the one who wanted me to do it. And so how it made me feel, it made me feel really good that, you know, my wife is in line with what I want to do and supports me. But it also freaked me out. It was very scary. It felt really weird, really surreal, quitting, of resigning, and it still feels a little strange, but it's great.
And I'm sure Leslie has known you for a long time, since I've known you. Before Leslie, I can give a little bit more information than our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had seen you for a long time bounce in and out of aspirations, dream jobs, creativity just flowing in your head, like you said. So she must have seen something different, and perhaps you detected something different with the personal training. What was it different about personal training, either for you or what she saw, that made her tell you to take the leap?
For as much as I love personal training, and as much as I love fitness in general, I think, so it is the right field for me. I mean, it's excellent. I'm still interested in a lot of other things. I'd still like to pursue them in my good years, my remaining good years. But really, I think it was kind of a perfect storm of my own maturity. And I wasn't, if I had found personal training, let's say when I was in college or even a couple of years out, it would have been just like any other thing. I'm almost convinced of it. For as much as I was actively into working out and everything, I didn't really value hard work. I didn't value discipline, tenacity, just the grind. I had no real appreciation for it. I was more into, you know, all I need to do is come up with the next idea. And I've realized that ideas mean nothing. I mean, without a proper execution and just knowing that you're going, that failure is inevitable, but that overcoming it is how you're going to be successful. Without doing that, you know, through things like Gun Safe Haven, for instance, I talked now about that. That I just wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for it. At this point in my life, you know, 3 months ago when I pulled the plug, I am ready. I feel I am. I'm very confident in that. I'm as ready as, you know, any point longer, and I might be just kind of, as Dr. Seuss put it, in waiting, in the the places you'll go. Have you ever read that book?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a long time. I do love myself a little bit of Dr. Seuss.
Dude, I read it for the first time 2 nights ago to my son, my 5-year-old son. I never read it before, but he got it from the library. I was reading him before bed, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is like it's like one of the best books I've ever read. It just really spoke to me about like what I wanted, you know, how I feel. There's this couple pages in the middle of it, and he's talking about being in waiting, and just all the people around you, just everybody's around you, just waiting, and they're just waiting for, I don't know, you know, he obviously had some clever rhymes to make it appealing for the reader, but basically just waiting for stuff to happen to them. And he talks about just running away from that waiting room, just getting the heck out of there and taking action. And like, I felt like I was just waiting. Like I'd been waiting for long enough, and now I was equipped. I had the savings, I had the support from my wife, I had the maturity, I had the, you know, discipline, the eagerness to work, and I had a passion that I could dump into it. So all the pieces are in place, and I, you know, that's when I decided to go for it.
Watch out, Deepak Chopra. Just a little Dr. Seuss, sometimes a little shorter and more. Like,
huh? Deepak Chopra, yeah. Well, he's got a gift for something.
So you've been doing this for more than 3 months, but 3 months has definitely come up a couple times in our conversation.
Yeah, 2 years.
So you really delved in. You really delved in 3 months ago. So what would you say is been the more challenging or most difficult thing that you didn't really anticipate these last 3 months that it really has surprised you? Because I think we all do a good job of come up with fears and excuses in our own head, but what was probably even something that you didn't anticipate?
Oh, that's a really good question. I should have a quick answer for that. One thing, I'm just kind of on the training level. Like I kind of mentioned before, I learned something new about how to train people. So I've always been pretty good at building rapport with people. Like, one of my strengths is just getting along with folks. So then that is a huge, I don't know how much you know about training, but I know you know a lot about counseling and otherwise. I mean, I'd imagine with just about anything you study, rapport is huge. Building mm-hmm. trust with your client and everything. That part has sort of come naturally, although I'm definitely have a long way to go before perfecting that. But the thing that really it's the training. It's the learning the proper progressions and regressions and how to play into somebody's momentum for the day. Every little day. Every day is a micro assessment of what your client is. And by the way, I'm stealing some logic. Some guys I really like, Jim Smith and Joe DeFranco, another certification I got recently. They talk a lot about using every day as an assessment. I actually talked to Jim Smith. He offered some consultation to some of his subscribers, and I talked to him and he said, he said one of the number one mistakes you can make as a trainer is to be so arrogant as to think that the workout that you have scheduled for your client that day is what they have to do, or what's going to be best for them. He said, you know, use everything from the, hey, how you doing when they walk in the door, to how their posture is, to how they're moving, to the expression on their face, to how they act in the warm up. Use that as the guide to what you're going to have them do that day. That's just coming, and you know, obviously having a workout program is critical to maximizing progress towards whatever their goals are. But for it to be exactly, okay, we're going to do 12 reps of this and 8 reps of this and blah blah blah, and I mean, you might, I've completely thrown workouts out the window. I mean, it's amazing how much you have to think on the fly, and that's part of it, been a big thing, is just how dynamic of a training it is. You know, when people ask for, I've had so many people come up to me since I started doing this and just say, you know, all I need is a program. All I need is somebody to tell me what to do. Just write down what I need to do. And it's just like, there's nobody out there who that's not all that anybody needs when it comes to fitness. I mean, because every day is different. You need, if you don't have the skills yourself to know what to do, you need a trainer. I mean, to optimize your efforts. I'm not saying that everybody needs a personal trainer to get results, but to get the best results, you need a good trainer. And I've thought about even getting one myself, just to kind of stay on, learn new things. I don't want to get complacent. I know I have things to work on, both in my own fitness, but also maybe, you know, getting a different perspective on how somebody might train me. I might be able to apply that to improve how I train others. So it's just the dynamics of it. You don't think much about, you know, all the exercises you can, some boilerplate exercises you could develop off some functional movement patterns, and it sounds really simple, but it can get, to really get the most out of it, it takes a lot. So just the depth and dynamics of it, I would say, is what surprised me the most.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you mentioned hiring somebody else to train you and to coach you, because, you know, we learn best sometimes, or a majority of the time, through our own experience, experientially. What is it that you would probably look for in somebody to coach you to maybe give the listeners an idea of what they should look for in a personal trainer?
Well, so there's I guess a couple things to address there. One would be how I would screen somebody in order to decide whether or not they're the right person for me. And then the other would be what I hope to gain from, once I find that right person, what I hope to gain from training under them. In terms of what to look for, I would, first you're just going to look, just address basic customer service professionalism aspects. I mean, if you show up and somebody doesn't know how to give a good handshake and they're always staring off and maybe looking at their phone, and which it sounds like something that you shouldn't have to worry about, but man, that is kind of from what I've seen, that's sort of the norm, or at least it's not that uncommon. You know, you want to be able to depend on the person just from a professional aspect. What I would do once we got past that, I'd be paying attention to how, you know, the questions they're asking me. If they don't ask me what I'm trying to achieve, if they don't ask me what my goals are in the first meeting, then that's a red flag. If they don't at least get some idea of what my injuries are or my shortcomings, like I always do mobility screens with people. I don't normally do very hardcore assessments the first session, or even the first few sessions, just depends on the client. But I do like to, you know, just take them through a few different through different ranges of motion to make sure I'm not going to kill them the first time we meet, and also just to kind of get an eye of, you know, what kind of weaknesses they might have and how we can address those through the programming. But I would just keep an eye on that, you know, just see what kind of questions they're asking you. Are they asking about your injury history? Are they asking about your goals? Are they asking about your timeline? Or do you jive with them? I mean, you know, you're not going to love everybody, but this is a person who's going to really get to know you in your ugliest state. I mean, you feel that you can hang out with that person for an hour while you're on the brink of death in some cases. And then you can look at their credit, you know, their certifications, their track records. You know, if that information's available, it's not everybody is going to have that. You know, there's some folks like me who, you know, need that first chance. But I would just say, like, you know, do I like this person? Do they seem professional? Do they seem like they know what they're talking about? Do they have an interest in what I can and can't do and what I want to do? Then I'd probably give them a chance. Now, for me, I would actually like to get. That's the advice I'd give somebody just looking to get started in fitness and wanting to get the guidance of a trainer. For me, I'd like to get some focus on maybe somebody a little more into the strength training side, that in developing absolute strength, and or I'd like to really fine tune my traditional weightlifting, my Olympic weightlifting. Skills of which I have virtually none. I mean, I could fake a snatch, and I could make to somebody with an untrained eye, I could show them how to do it. But I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that because I don't feel confident in the movement, in my ability to do the movement. And I'd like to. So I'd probably look for somebody who could teach me how to do those. Maybe do a seminar. But then, you know, strength training. I like to see how somebody writes a program for me. See how they adjust when I might come in with a bum knee for the day, or maybe I didn't get a good night's sleep and I'm supposed to do like heavy doubles on a deadlift or something, which just not normally doesn't go very well. I just like to see how they react and what the changes they make, not necessarily to test them, but to kind of use those, their adaptations, and put them in my own toolbox as appropriate. So I'd like to get somebody more specialized in developing strength, and perhaps some specific Olympic weightlifting skills, you could say. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. As I think you alluded to, working out can be tough business. It can be really hard. and not everybody is wired to enjoy going into the gym. So I guess I have two questions for you. One is, how do you recognize the difference between somebody coming in on a given day because they didn't sleep right, or because they say they slept on their neck, or because they're tired, and making an excuse, or it being a valid excuse?
Hmm.
And I guess the second question is, how do you help people work? What would your suggestions be to have people who aren't hiring personal trainers to work through that on their own so they can push through? Because, you know, there's different numbers they say as to how long it takes to form a habit. So how do you create these positive habits, when, especially for somebody new, which I'm sure you've dealt a lot with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good question. Good questions. Well, as far as identifying whether somebody is sleepy or pissed off, maybe they got a fight with their spouse or didn't eat right, you can, you know, if it's somebody brand new, I mean, you know, maybe their first session, you're going to kind of have to take them at their word. You have nothing to really compare it to. So that's just something you're going to, but it's going to make itself pretty evident quickly. I mean, I've seen enough flesh move, as it's been put. I like that way to put it. I've trained enough people, a relatively modest amount, but still enough people over the last couple of years to kind of know when somebody either has some serious, perhaps low blood sugar issues, maybe they're diabetic or something, they forgot to tell me, or you could just really tell, and you could tell by the color of somebody's skin, you know, before they walked in, and then maybe if after the warm up they look like a ghost, then and by all other accounts, you know, they should be able to handle, you know, a couple jumping jacks, then which, by the way, my warm-ups are, as anybody of my clients will tell you, significantly more complex than a couple jumping jacks, but you get what I'm saying. You'll be able to tell, it'd be pretty clear, pretty quickly, that there's an issue, and then you can kind of pry that apart and ask some questions and just hope that they're being honest with you. For somebody that you have a little bit of experience with, you'll be able to tell. I'm able to tell. I don't think it's rocket science. You know, it's just like a friend. You could tell when a friend is having a bad day. You're like, hey, what's up? You seem different today. Something's off. So if they're not telling you, I always ask. As soon as somebody comes in, how you doing today? How you feeling? Anything bothering you? You know, and not to get in their business, but it's just, let's just get anything that needs to get out of the way right now, so that I can train you effectively. And that's implied. I mean, no one gets weirded out when I ask them those questions. So if they forget, which sometimes happens, or they just don't feel like talking about it, I can tone down the intensity. Let's say if somebody's really tired, or sometimes we'll give it a shot. We'll do something in the warm up that might kind of wake them up, like do some medicine ball slams or something like that, that kind of stimulates the nervous system. But if it's something that, you know, I think they're going to get hurt, or I just don't think they're in it, then we're just going to do something else. We'll you know, it helps as a trainer to have another thing, actually, that the Jim Smith information that Jim Smith gave me, Smitty, was that you should really have a set list of progressions and regressions in your head that you can kind of access on the fly, whether that's a literal list or a spreadsheet that you have, or just enough experience to be able to tap into that on demand. So you got to be kind of nimble as a trainer, and if your client is not feeling it, then adjust accordingly. The second part of your question was,
what advice would you have to help get people started?
Yeah,
and work through that initial
shock of, yeah, that's a
in shape.
Yes, that's a good question. So, when developing a habit, I think almost what got me into what got me to stay with training, because up until that point, I probably tried 10 different, more than that. I'd go in the weight room for a couple of months, and then something would happen, go on vacation, get sick, whatever, and I'd quit for several more months and just did that forever. What really got me was finding a time. Number one, finding a time that I could really stick to. And not everybody has that. You know, I was able, I had a very cool managers. I was able to be flexible at lunch. I'd go into the lunchtime was my time to train, and unless I just had a pressing meeting or there was some systems that were down that I had to fix at the moment, I made it to the gym and got my work done. The thing is, just showing up, really, it's sort of a tired cliche, but it's totally true. Showing up is the number one thing. Get in the door, do something. If you just feel like garbage, well, if you feel like total garbage, then yeah, you want to maybe stay home and allow yourself to recover. But if you're just having a bad day, honestly, just getting in there and walking on the treadmill for 15 minutes just to get that time spent ingrained, that pattern carved out in your head to help with adherence is, it's sometimes all it takes. Just do something, fill the space, do 10 push-ups. I mean, I know that sounds almost like it'd be worthless, but you could argue that it kind of is on some level, is physiologically speaking, but it really does something, I think, to develop the habit. So I had days where I didn't want to do anything, and I just go in there and be like, look, I'm gonna do 10 burpees and I'm gonna leave, and that's it. But I got in there. I didn't think. I might have thought the rest of the day, yeah, I probably could have done a little more. But I thought, I went in and I did it, and my brain satisfied. You know, the habit continues. So show up and do something. Now, obviously, you want to when you can, you want to give it your best shot, and you want to have a way to go about it that makes sense. But number one, for somebody starting off that maybe doesn't have access to a trainer, they're doing it themselves, just start as soon as possible, move as often as possible, and show up every time. I mean, sounds very bland, but those people don't do those things. They don't start. They're waiting for the perfect time. There's no perfect time. There's no perfect time to start something. There's no perfect time to quit something. You just have to do it. So start. It doesn't matter that you don't know everything there is to know about exercise. Nobody does. I don't know everything there is to know about exercise, and I've just been consuming it ravenously for the last 3 years, and I know very little in the grand scheme. Even if you know less than I do, it doesn't mean you can't. And there's a website, for instance, I always point people to, they don't, if it doesn't work out where we can't train, and or maybe they don't have the money or they don't have the time or whatever the case may be. There's a website I really like called, I could give a smart answer and say called Google, but more specifically, there is a site called Darebee, Darebee.com, which I have no affiliation to. I don't know anybody who runs it, but it's just a really easy to access site with fitness information, kind of for the total general public who maybe starting from nothing, maybe they don't have any equipment, and they just give you really simple exercises that most people can do, a couple different regressions, modifiers, and then some programs to kind of help you toward your goals. Just start with that. Start with something like that. Find a workout online, open a men's health or women's health magazine and just pick some workouts. Do them, try to stay safe. But once you get into it, I talked before about having the right context in your mind from experience for getting more information. Once you do that, then yeah, maybe you see your results, but then your results just sort of start to plateau, stall out a little bit. Then go back in and say you have a better idea where you are and what it takes at that point. Maybe you've been doing something for 3 months, just some workout you found in a magazine. You're ready for more information. You're gonna consume it better. That habit's gonna be in place. You're gonna know what your body's capable of. Relatively, you're going to be in a much better position, but it all starts by just starting. I mean, you have to just start, do something. And again, showing up. So it's so, I hear it all the time, but I hear it all the time because people need to hear it. it's being said all the time because no one does. They have their excuses. And I get clients all the time, they're tired and they can't come and whatever. I don't give people a hard time, but I say, just do something. Hold a plank for a minute, for a minute. Do a freaking push-up. Just fill that space. Get it in there. And because once once you quit something, you quit for a day, you feel bad about it, but it also feels real good.
Well, you've probably gotten to see the entire gambit of clients who are successful and the unfortunate clients who drop out just because it's a numbers game. The more people you see, the more successes you're going to have, but you're also going to have some lack of successes that you can learn from.
Yeah.
So either looking at either end of that spectrum, the ones that aren't successful or the ones that are successful, what have you learned, especially in these last 3 months, as to what is the difference that makes the difference? What do your successful clients do that your unsuccessful clients don't do? Or if you don't want to label your clients, just individuals in general.
For one, I'll say that, have you ever read Extreme Ownership, Jocko Willink?
I have not.
I know you listen to Tim Ferriss and we talked about Joe Rogan. He's been on both those podcasts, and that's how I found him. But Jocko Willink, he's a Navy SEAL.
I've heard of Jocko. Yeah, I've listened to his stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. You just haven't read his book. Well, I mean, he sort of lives, at least as far as I know, he lives the book. I think probably all Navy SEALs do, at least. Anyways, the book is all about taking ownership over your situation, taking accountability for it, regardless of how much it seems like somebody else's fault. It is, at the end of the day, especially if somebody's paying you to do something or you agreed to adhere to some sort of mission, some obligation. At the end of the day, you know, if it goes wrong, you are to blame, at least on some level. And his whole thing is you're to blame. You know, you could have done something about it, whether or not it was easy. It's irrelevant. It is on you. So if I have a client that sort of fades out, I think that it's because it'd be really easy for me to say they just weren't ready for it. You know, there's ACE, my ACE certification talks about like the five levels I can't remember what the heck it's called. I'd fail the test right now. The five levels of readiness, you know, essentially you have somebody who thinks personal training who thinks that fitness is unnecessary. And, you know, I had a granddad who smoked every day and he lived to be 96 and he never did a push-up in his life and he's fine. And this fitness is for jokers and people who are suckers, all the way up to somebody who's been working out for 5 years with a steady habit and seen progress and everything in the steps in between that. Yes. When you get somebody who's ready, they've maybe hit rock bottom or close to it in terms of their wellness, and they feel fat. They look fat. Maybe a little kid called them fat. They're sick of huffing and puffing when they go up the stairs. They're sick of their joints rocking and shifting around every step they take. And they have that. They know that there's a need and they're ready for it. And it helps if they've had some experience in the past where, you know, they used to be an athlete or something. And they know what's possible. Again, to experience it really gives you, I think, a leg up to have some taste of what's possible. Those people are easier to work with in terms of, well, because they're just ready to hear. They're ready to hear everything you have, and they tend to give it their all, and they tend to not make excuses. And there's, of course, exceptions, of course, for sure. But the readiness of the client really makes a big difference. But back to being an owner of it, it's kind of my job to find out. You gotta give them little successes. You gotta give them little wins. Try to give them little wins each workout. And yeah, you might give them. They might have had a killer workout, felt great about it, but then, you know, they go on vacation the next week and everything, it just never happens again. That happens, but there is always a way for me, the trainer, to get them back in and get them racing toward their goals again. And it's just kind of no, I'm not exactly answering your question, but really at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's trying to figure out how to get them back in the gym, not just to make money off of them, but to get them going, working toward their goals. Cause you know, if somebody's just paying me, I don't really, whatever. I mean, it's nice, I guess, but it's not why I'm doing this. I'm not doing it really for the money. I do need to feed my family again, but it's not. I do it because it's fun and because I'm interested in it. And because, honestly, the helping people part, this makes me kind of sound like a jerk, but I just figured that'd be kind of be a nice bonus. Like, I'm more selfishly, I'm just more into fitness. I think it's neat to find out, and I kind of wanted to use my training people in person as a lab, just to better my understanding of movement and what works in terms of hypertrophy and strength and tension and all that programming, and just, you know, if somebody gets good results and they're happy about it, that's just a thumbs up from both of us. But man, it is so cool when somebody comes up to you and they're like, they're just thrilled because, you know, they dropped a waist size, or somebody who they hadn't seen in a long time came up to them and said, wow, you look amazing, what have you been doing? Or they, you know, lift up a 50 pound bag of dog food and throw it in the car, and they've never done that before. And those little moments, I didn't realize how much those would mean to me. So that's a nice bonus. So it's getting people to get to those moments, which I know sounds like a no-brainer, but getting them to those moments and getting them to realize that they are the ones who got themselves there, and kind of have that innate motivation. That's not the word for it. There's a specific word for it.
Internal motivation.
Yeah, internal motivation. There's a, again, I'm trying to call back from my textbook. It'll come to me as soon as we hang up, I'm sure. But regardless, essentially getting them, I'm just the guide. You know, I'm just a tool. That's all I am. I mean, literally, I'm a total tool. But I am I'm just a piece of the puzzle. They're the ones doing it, and getting them to realize that they're capable of it, and they're the ones who did it. That's when you really start to see that progress, and they start to drive themselves. And so it's up to me to get them there. They don't see it like that. They see it as, you know, somebody who's gonna yell at them and tell them what to do. And but really, the truth is, it's getting them to the realization that they're the ones who did it, and they're the ones who are capable of doing it. And I'm just kind of the idea guy. So it's up to me though to do it. It's up to me to get them there, and I'm just finding out. I guess to tack on to your previous question about what have I learned, what have I learned I didn't anticipate? It's just all the ways that you can get people closer to that goal, and, you know, and the distance that I am from achieving that level of motivating others. But just get closer to it every time. Try to anyway.
It's so interesting because when you took the ACE certification test, you said that about 95% of it was everything but fundamentals and philosophy and how to effectively help people build muscle, build better neurological connections, increase strength, stability, so on and so forth. And as you actually got into personal training, you discovered that a lot of it, I don't know if it's 95%, but a lot of it is everything but the hard, bare-bone fundamentals of how to get people in better shape. There's so much more to it than that.
Yes. And there is a lot to, and in 95%, I'm sure I was exaggerating significantly, but
that's my number. That's,
yeah.
Not
okay.
Yours, so.
Okay. But yeah, there is a whole lot at least on the test. You know, it's funny. There's this huge, there's this big book they call The Essentials, like a 400 page book on anatomy and like the Krebs cycle and the Corey cycle and, joint insertion points or muscle insertion points and everything you could possibly think of as far as physiology goes. I felt like a med school student or something reading it. I studied my butt off for that part of it, and yeah, none of that book was on it. I mean, it was all. So yeah, you are right. It was not a lot on actually how to I guess we'll just call it the physiology behind training people. But that is very important. It is. I mean, there's certainly best ways to train folks and best steps to take and, you know, ways to find out what are the best steps because everybody's different. But yeah, I mean, the truth of it is, as long as you, like I said before, I stand by it. If you just start, you know, you're taking a step in the right direction. It doesn't just because it's not the best possible route you could ever take does not mean that you're not going to see positive results for it and be happy from it. So yeah, the biggest part of it is it's all the soft stuff, the stuff you can't really, it's really tough to define, the rapport, the motivation, the little things that, you know, just kind of the human, the human side of it. It's really interesting. It is. Yeah. You put it well.
And I would love to talk with you for 2 or 3 hours and dork out talking about all the different aspects of periodization and up training and down training, and, like, mm-hmm. as you put it, suppressing workouts. And I'm sure a lot of listeners would find that fascinating, but it's kind of, we've gone to the scope of the conversation that's even more important, like you put it, the human element. But going back to the fundamentals and the physiology for a minute, without getting into the 2 hour line of explaining, what are some of the fundamentals that really you learned in the theory end of it that in the implementation end of it you think really is important, or maybe things you discovered from theory to implementation really don't work? What are a couple of the tried and true fundamentals or philosophies or paradigms that you do have about personal training, just to give our listeners an idea of how you go about making people bigger, faster, stronger?
Good movie. So some training principles, really my answer for both, cause I'm a student of other trainers, of other coaches. I love learning. I love reading other people's books and taking their seminars and listening to their content on, you know, whether it be a podcast, video, whatever. But, and a lot of them will tell you, for instance, Dan John is a strength coach I like a lot. Jim Wendler, I'm doing a 5-3-1 program right now. And Joe DeFranco and Jim Smith, those are guys I follow a lot. I've all heard them say at one point, especially with their own programs, they all have their own kind of programs. They are as good at coaches as they are. They're also marketers. So they say, regardless of the program, I think most recently I read Jim Wendler. He said that this 5-3-1 program, it's just a program. You know, it's something that I like. It's something that I've had success with. It's something that I've shown to others and they've had success with. But it's just a program. It's just something. It's just one way to go about it. Key is you have to stick to the program. Like, if you start somebody's program, everybody wants to spice it up with, like, like Dan John has this program called Easy Strength, and it's what it sounds like. You train big compound movements on a very, very low level, very low intensity level, you know, maybe like anywhere as low as like 40-50% of your maximum, all the way up to occasionally hitting like 80s and 90s, but you're doing it very frequently. You know, so he's talking about, like, somebody on a hit him up asking him an email, you know, I really like to train hard, you know, how can I work that into my Easy Strength program? And he's just like, dude, it's called Easy Strength. Like, pick a different program, or quit trying. Everybody wants to take the plan and they want to adjust it. And sometimes, now I know I just said sometimes you have to adjust it, but that's really on a micro cycle level. That's on the day. You know, that's making sure you don't get hurt. That's not rewriting the program. Think about it this way. There's probably, and I'm, by the way, I'm making this up on the fly, so hopefully it goes somewhere. Just a warning again. There's probably 1,000 ways to make brownies. And all those tried and true recipes probably end up tasting great. They taste like brownies. That's the end result. The goal was to get brownies. We did the recipe. We got there, we're eating brownies, and they're delicious. Okay, but if you got somebody who's like, you know, I really like sugar a lot, or I really like sweet and savory, sweet and savory things, so I'm gonna add, it's calling for a pinch of salt, I'm gonna add 3 pinches, because I love salt. Well, the rest of the program could be great, or the rest of the recipe could be on point, and it might look like a brownie, but you're not gonna get the end result. It's really not that much different from training programs. So regardless of if you're the trainer designing a program, maybe, or if you're taking somebody else's program and using it to train somebody, or if you're just, you know, Johnny Weightlifter at home and you're just looking for a good program that fits you, my advice, and this goes for meal plans and nutrition too, for don't screw with it. Just do it. Just see it through, you know, and then make decisions after that. I think that's probably one of the number one reason people don't get in shape is because probably they just don't start doing it and they don't show up. But then once they get to it, the reason people never, you know, might get stuck on a plateau is because they want to screw with everything. There's nothing wrong with taking somebody's program and just seeing it through. I mean, it's not a shot to your pride or anything. You still find out what works. You still find out what you like, and then you kind of use that information to kind of filter through another program. But regardless of what you choose, most of it works. There are of course exceptions, but most of the programs out there that were created by somebody who has some bit of a following, and it's not that hard to determine that. You know, there's a million free programs out there. Just pick one that you like. Pick one that looks appealing to you. Pick one that can fit your timeline, fit the frequency of what you're working out, and fit the equipment that you have. Freaking do it. Don't mess with it. Just do it as it's written. See it through. And you're going to get results. Or at the very least, you're going to have a better idea of what works for you and what doesn't, which is almost just as important as getting results. So, I you know, I'm just trying to keep it simple, like something that somebody could take. Just go on. I mentioned before, you know, this website that I like a lot is Google. Like, just freaking Google what you're looking for. It's not that hard. It got me through 11 years of IT and three engineering positions. It's the dirty little secret that everyone uses, but no one seems to actually use. Just look up, be a little bit resourceful. The information's out there. And ignore the haters on the posts. Find maybe one good guy saying, I got results from this, you know, Windler's 531 or Dan John's Easy Strength or Joe DeFranco's SB901 or whatever the case may be.
So it's all right to look around, but once you find something that fits the mold of what you want.
Yeah. One of the things that drives me nuts, it drives me nuts to see other people do it, but it also drives me nuts because it's personal, because I used to do it all the time. It's you get in this information overload. You get addicted to consuming information. You know, you're under the guise, you're tricking yourself into thinking that you're learning and you're working because you're reading information. But you might look back over the last two years and realize all you've been doing is reading about other people's information. You haven't actually tried anything yourself. And there's a lot of folks out there like that, on all levels of the fitness industry, and probably just business, tech, whatever industry you're in, but definitely in fitness, where, you know, whether or not they're on a message board and they're talking about, now you need to do a neutral grip to get the proper rhomboid activation, and yet they've probably never actually gotten up out of their seat, all the way up to you could have a high level researcher who is telling you how to train your clients but has never actually trained somebody themselves. They just sit there and just kind of get drunk on information, and they trick themselves into thinking that they're working. At some point, you got to just try it. You know, pick something, try it. Don't be afraid of it. And that's something that I used to do. I was afraid that I wasn't going to get the perfect one. And I really liked, it's so much easier to just read a book than it is to go and have an adventure, which, you know, you're going to have several failures in. Like, don't be afraid to, in anything, but especially fitness, don't be afraid to, you know, get used to, get comfortable making yourself uncomfortable, you know. Just try it. Just go for it. Pick something and go for it.
Well, with that said, you've been very generous with not only your time, but also all the wealth of information you bestowed on us. So much of it, which is not, in all honesty, having to do with personal training, but more so the psychology and the managing of people and the managing of others, and really finding the reasons for what dedicates them. And not only getting started, but continuing. And you've done a good job of plugging some other resources, including Google. But if people would like to find you and your company and how to follow you, because you do a great job of marketing, where can they find you at?
They could find me, let's see, the three places I'm most active, and I need to be more active, but I told you about my focus issues. I'm working on them. But the three places where I'm most active are on Facebook. So for my company, my personal training company is 3 Storm Fitness, 3 spelled out, Storm Fitness. If you've ever seen Big Trouble in Little China, you might be familiar with the 3 Storms. Depending on whether or not producers of
I didn't get that. That's cool.
Depending okay. on whether, depending on whether producers of the movie are or owners of the movie are listening to this, I don't know. I don't think I'm violating anything. But it's 3 Storm, not 3 Storms. Just 3 Storm Fitness, and I'm on Facebook. I'm on YouTube, and I have 3stormfitness.com as well. Probably most active on YouTube. But I'm working on increasing my being more prolific on all of those platforms.
Well, we didn't get to it today. Maybe we'll have you back on again sometime. But just a little cliffhanger for the listeners: Rob's YouTube channel is definitely worth checking out. He has a lot of good information on there, and also a lot of unique ways of teaching people and projecting his message, which really is authentic, genuine, and honest, which I think you guys have seen and heard from this podcast today. So I definitely want to encourage you guys to check out his YouTube channel and his other resources, and thank Rob for appearing.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate you having me on, man.